and welcome to edition number 2119 of the Whitney Talking News, which we are recording on Thursday the 30th of July 2026 at the High Street Methodist Church in Whitney. I'm Alan Revell, your editor this week. Beside me at the recording controls is Graham Diacon, and this week our four readers are Stefan Gabshevich, Valerie T, Nigel James and Anne Norris. And in fact, we have an extra reader this week, and his name is Ethan Morgan. He's been doing some work experience with us in recent weeks, and he'll be among our readers on this edition. So, as usual, we're grateful to the Whitney Gazette for most of the items we're using this week, and we will begin with a story from the Gazette, read by Stefan, about the ongoing disruption in Whitney Town Centre.
Yeah, it's entitled Leaders' Serious Concern Over £4.4 Million Town Upgrade. Concerns about a £4.4 million project to redesign part of Whitney Centre have been raised by the leader of the Town Council as the scheme approaches the halfway point. Ruth Smith called for the second half of the upgrade project on High Street and Market Square to be better managed. This comes after Whitney Chamber of Commerce reported that its members' trading figures declined between 20 and 30% compared with last year. Ms. Smith's letter to the construction company Galliford Try and Oxfordshire County Council highlights several issues with the project, which began in May and is scheduled to be completed in November. The area will include new seating and trees, resurfacing of pavements, creating a new footway space and a new bus stop for community transport. The Labour councillor said, "I write on behalf of Whitney Town Council after unanimous support for a proposal to do so at our full council meeting last week. All 17 councillors wish to convey serious concern that disappointment at the communication surrounding the active work on the High Street and the avoidable disruption, confusion and loss of trade that has arisen so far concerning bus users and businesses. Among the issues raised were lax communication to individual businesses about the timescale, a lack of clarity about replacement bus stops, not enough positive signage about the High Street remaining open to trade, and challenges around the appearance of the work. With the second half of the work set to commence on August the 9th, when the other side of the road will be the focus, the Town Council has made a number of requests for the project. These include clear signs at the former bus stop sites telling people where to catch specific services, regular in-person conversations with the project's liaison officer with businesses, and positive, large, colourful "We Are Open" style signs. We look forward to hearing better reports from businesses and bus users in the second half of the work," said Ms. Smith. Responding to the comments, the County Council said it was seeking to enhance signage. A spokesperson said, "We have been engaging with local stakeholders, including the Town Council and the Chamber of Commerce, during the work for enhancements to Whitney High Street and Marketplace. Where concerns have been raised, we are seeking to enhance signage and provide additional direct communications, and we will continue dialogue to mitigate local concerns where possible. Residents, businesses and other local stakeholders can sign up for updates." Galliford Try directed questions to the County Council.
And now it's Valerie with the first of two stories about plans for more new housing in our area.
This is headed "Bid for 400 new homes on sensitively designed site." Some 400 new homes are being planned on the edge of the Oxfordshire Cotswolds. Developers are eyeing up around 56 acres of land north of the A44 London Road in Chipping Norton for the new high-quality scheme. 40% affordable housing, a new local centre, extensive green infrastructure and a new nature park are all included in the plans. The Warwick-based developer Gallagher Developments has not yet submitted a formal planning application to West Oxfordshire District Council, but the developer has been in consultation with some residents and authorities around its project. An outline planning application is expected to be submitted this summer after comments from a consultation have been considered. A statement from Gallagher Developments said, "The development proposed at the site, land north of London Road, Chipping Norton, is coming forward to respond to the identified need for housing at sustainable sites in sustainable locations." Gallagher has been engaging with Chipping Norton Town Council about the prospect of a sports hub for Chipping Norton. "The site presents a chance to deliver comprehensively planned and sustainable growth for Chipping Norton. In addition, just a short distance to the east of Chipping Norton, there are significant employment opportunities around the Enstone corridor. Locating developments to the east of Chipping Norton allows for a coordinated approach to economic and residential growth in the district, encouraging sustainable patterns of commuting." Gallagher said, "It wants to create a distinctive, sustainable new neighbourhood for Chipping Norton with high-quality homes and community facilities. More than 27 acres will be publicly accessible green space, with around half the site planned for the development. The developer says this will be sensitively designed and would include a community growing space, children's play areas, a nature park with species-rich meadows and connected wildfire corridors, and landscape boundaries. Together, these spaces will support health and well-being, deliver biodiversity net gain, and strengthen the site's long-term ecological resilience," the developer said.
And next is Ethan, who I should say is a Year 12 student at Woodgreen School in Witney. And he tells me he's looking at universities currently and he's interested perhaps in becoming a journalist. Ethan has the second of those housing stories.
My article today reads, "A work to start on 265 homes for forces." Work is set to begin next month on 265 new homes for members of the armed forces and their families. The green space in Carterton has been closed for works relating to a proposed plan for 265 new military homes to be built. The land between Up Avon Way and Northwood Crescent, which was once used as housing for RAF Bryce Norton, has been earmarked for redevelopment and closed to the public. The road adjacent to this site, Northwood Crescent, will close from Monday, August 3rd to no later than 31st of December 2029. Plans were lodged early in December for 265 homes, bungalows and apartments to be built on the site, as well as parking spaces and pedestrian access. Buildings on the site previously used married quarters for RAF Bryce Norton were built in the 1960s and demolished in 2008. The applicant, Taylor Wimpey, said in their planning statement that the development would plan essential affordable housing for military personnel.
And completing this first round of reports, it's Anne with a story about a firm facing charges over a worker's death.
Family firm charged over man's electrocution death. A family-run guttering business has been charged with manslaughter after a worker was killed after being electrocuted. Cotswold Rainwater Services of Northfield Farm Lane, Witney, has been charged with corporate manslaughter and failing to discharge a duty under the Health and Safety at Work Act. It follows the death of Andrew Claridge, 34, from Minster Lovell, who died on November the 14th, 2024, at Hunter's Moon House, Charney Road, Longworth. Thames Valley Police pressed charges last week following a joint investigation with the Health and Safety Executive. A representative of Cotswold Rainwater Services is due to appear at High Wycombe Magistrates Court on August the 11th. A post-mortem examination heard guttering engineer Mr. Claridge died as a result of electrocution. At a 2024 inquest, opening, Coroner Nicholas Graham heard that Mr. Claridge's death had been verified by paramedic Ian Powell. It was reported there was an incident while he was at work and he subsequently died. Cotswold Services is an independent family-run company that has been supplying, installing and providing expert guttering repairs for over four decades. It provides gutter installation, gutter cleaning and guttering repair services. On its website, the company describes itself as an independent family-run business with over 40 years of experience. It adds, "Our expertise lies in the supply, installation and repair of a wide range of guttering systems. We cater to both domestic and commercial clients, offering tailored solutions to meet the unique needs of each property. Our commitment to quality and customer satisfaction is at the core of everything we do. Its most significant projects include installing a traditional cast iron rainwater goods to a medieval manor house near Stow-on-the-Wold. In addition, its engineers were tasked with designing a high-capacity gutter system for major London development Coaldrops Yard near King's Cross."
Right, my story is headed "Flood-Ridden Estate to Get Better Tax-Funded Drains." A flood-ridden housing development is to get a taxpayer-funded drain. Buttercross Lane will be getting an improved drain, which is set to be installed in the coming weeks, funded by the public purse. The Whitney development, which is built on the site of a former industrial works in the town centre, has had repeated problems with flooding over recent years. Over the last winter period, the estate flooded several times, with one householder, who asked to remain anonymous, describing the situation as appalling. The householder said, "I can't leave my house today as I can't drive my car through this. This is the worst it's ever been. It's appalling, and the council think the solution is to send a lorry once in a while. It's totally unacceptable, a failure of their adoption of the road management and safety. I'm at a loss with what to do." Initially, Oxfordshire County Council put in place a low-level drainage tax to provide interim relief, but now a more permanent solution is to be delivered. The drainage improvements will be carried out from August the 3rd to the 28th, with warning signs set to be installed at the junction of Station Lane and Buttercross Lane. Buttercross Lane will be closed with a junction with Willowbank during the works, and Liz Leffman, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Highways, Construction and Repair, said, "Residents have had to put up with floodings at this location for far too long due to a lack of proper maintenance by the developer prior to the road's adoption by the council as highways authority. Officers have worked hard to come up with a solution to this problem, which was far from straightforward to be resolved. It appears the work will come from the taxpayers' pocket, which Conservative Councillor Thomas Ashby is unhappy about. He said, "While I am deeply disappointed that taxpayers are footing the bill for a development that should have been included proper drainage from the start, I appreciate that council officers' hard work in designing a robust fix. Thank you to the residents of Buttercross Lane and the entire Buttercross estate for your continued patience while I worked hard behind the scenes to get this sorted. This comes after it was revealed that Bauer Mapson, the house builder that developed the Buttercross works in Whitney, owes a total of £434,164.
This article is about a historic World War I hospital which is up for sale. An historic hospital has been put up for sale. The old War Memorial Hospital at Horsfair in Chipping Norton has been listed for sale with the price not disclosed. The 32,000 square foot site in the centre of the town has planning permission for 14 dwellings with no affordable housing requirement. West Oxfordshire District Council initially approved the planning application in 2017, although several applications have followed in 2020 and 2023. There were 21 conditions attached to the original consent. According to the NHS website, the original building was erected as a private house before 1875. During World War I, it was run as a Red Cross hospital by Mrs. Daly of Over Norton Park, where it treated wounded and sick servicemen. After the war, it was run as a cottage hospital, supported by voluntary donations, with around £10,000 raised in the 1930s to extend the original building, which had only 16 beds and one private ward. Only minor operations were performed on the premises, with a matron in charge of the facility. Run by Oxford Health NHS Foundation Trust, the hospital moved from its original site to London Road, Chipping Norton, at the end of February 2011.
And now on a completely different subject, my article is headed Sex Assault Victim Speaks Out as Attacker Avoids Jail. A sex attack victim said she had to live every day with the memory of what happened to her as the man who assaulted her walked free from court. Hayley Dobbin waived her right to anonymity after Robert Pollard was given a suspended sentence. Oxford Crown Court heard how Pollard of Lancot Road, Whitney, had been dating Ms. Dobbin's sister when he attacked her on November the 21st, 2021. Ms. Dobbin was intoxicated in her own home when Pollard let himself in before sexually assaulting her. The court heard he put a chain on the door, forcing her to break the chain to escape. Now Ms. Dobbin has spoken to the Gazette about the impact the offence has had on her, the disappointment at her attacker's sentence. Pollard was sentenced last Friday to 2 years and 9 months in prison, suspended for 2 years, having been found guilty of one count of sexual assault. The 32-year-old victim said she was shocked that he hadn't been jailed, adding that it reflected poorly on the justice system. She added, "He was found guilty of sexually assaulting me, yet he walked free from court. He gets to carry on living his life with his family, well, I have to live every day with what he did to me. I waited 5 years. I endured every delay, every court hearing, every reminder of what happened. The trial was even postponed because his defence team wasn't available. Yet after all that, he walked away." Ms. Dobbin claimed Pollard had continued to date her sister, whose birthday party had been attending at the Three Horseshoes in Longhanborough, in the hours leading up to the attack. Ms. Dobbin said, "When people ask why so few victims come forward, this is one of the reasons. It takes years to reach court. Victims are forced to relive their trauma repeatedly. And even when there is a guilty verdict, the sentence doesn't always feel like justice." As well as the suspended jail sentence, Pollard was given a 9-month electronically monitored curfew, with him being allowed out between 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. each day. He was banned from drinking alcohol for 120 days, handed a number of community resolution days, and ordered to pay costs of £500. However, Ms. Dobbin said she feels that justice has slipped away rather than being served. "A guilty verdict matters," she said, "because it means I was believed. But justice should be about more than conviction on paper. It should reflect the harm caused." In his summary, Judge Michael Roakes not only said that the 34-year-old had a very unhealthy attitude towards women, but that he was fortunate to avoid prison.
The next article's heading is New £100 Fines Proposed by Council for Dog Fouling. Dog owners could soon face new fines for failing to clean up after their pets. West Oxfordshire District Council is proposing a Public Spaces Protection Order, PSPO, to tackle dog fouling across the area, with a public consultation set to launch. The PSPO would make it an offence not to clear up dog mess in public places or carry a means of disposing it. Anyone caught breaching the order could receive a fixed penalty notice of up to £100 or face prosecution with a maximum fine of £1,000. Alistair Ray, the Council's Executive Member for Environment, said, We are proposing a new order that would allow for £100 fines to be issued where dog fouling is caught, or up to £1,000 for a prosecution. This consultation will give residents the opportunity to help shape this order that could make our shared spaces cleaner, safer and more enjoyable for everyone, while ensuring any measures introduced are fair, proportionate and practical. It is about sending a clear message that leaving dog mess in public is unacceptable. If approved, the order would apply across all parks, footpaths, open spaces and streets in West Oxfordshire. The consultation will gather feedback from residents, town and parish councils and partner organisations.
My next story is entitled Conservatives Beat Reform in a By-Election. The Oxfordshire Conservatives have been beaten Reform UK in a by-election. Thomas Cripps has become the new Rock Farm representative for Carterton Town Council, defeating the Reform candidate by almost 50 votes. The Conservatives said he was incredibly honoured by the election victory and thanked everyone who helped his campaign. He said, "Through this campaign, I listened to residents who want a practical solution to local issues and a councillor who will stand up for Carterton. I promise to work hard, listen and deliver, and that's exactly what I intend to do from day one." The result sends a clear message that local people want their voices heard. I look forward to working with fellow councillors, community groups and residents to make Carterton an even better place to live.
And now for some good news. An ultra-rare bird has been spotted in the county for the first time for 25 years. An ultra-rare sighting of a bird has got birdwatchers excited. Twitchers have been travelling to the border with Gloucestershire in the hope to spot the rare bird. It represents only the third British record of a long-tailed shrike, with the first sighting being in the Outer Hebrides in November 2000. Also known as the rufous-backed shrike, the medium-sized predatory songbird is widely distributed across Asia. It is noted for its bold black facial mask and a very long tail. Bird Guides reports the bird was spotted in the UK on July the 8th, but its presence was kept quiet until July the 18th. Birdwatchers were able to locate the shrike on July the 19th, and it has remained on view ever since, attracting hundreds of people. Josh Jones of Bird Guides said, "This is a truly extraordinary inland occurrence of what is an extremely rare visitor to Europe from Asia. There have only been about 15 European records ever. The long-tailed shrike is one of the rarest species ever to be recorded in Britain, and following the first, almost 26 years have passed without a repeat occurrence."
Rogue gardener scammed customers out of £39,000. A rogue gardener who called on people to take a leap of faith scammed customers out of more than £39,000. Bruce Harris from Longcompton near Chipping Norton was sentenced to 3 years in prison, suspended for 30 months at Warwick Crown Court. He was ordered to complete 200 hours of unpaid work and 20 days of rehabilitation activity. Starting in 2019, Harris was hired by residents, mainly in Banbury, for various gardening tasks, including building walls and creating outdoor model railways. In most cases, he asked for large upfront payments, but only completed a small portion of the work, then stopped, citing various excuses. He also offered customers low-priced sheds and plants, claiming special deals with suppliers, and pressured them to quickly transfer money to secure the deal. However, the promised goods or services were never delivered. Harris eventually stopped responding to customers. In police interviews, he continued to make excuses for not giving refunds or completing work, blaming snow, a broken-down van, and cutting his hand. Following an investigation by Detective Constable Alison Roberts, Harris was charged with 13 counts of fraud by false representation.
Now the first of two pub stories. New pub that aims to rival the Farmer's Dog opens. Arrival to Jeremy Clarkson's pub, The Farmer's Dog, has opened its doors. Nigel Bailey and his wife Rachel, who live in Bryce Norton, became the new owners of the former Horse and Radish in Minster Lovell earlier this year. The tavern was on the market for £850,000 last summer, although that fell to £650,000 late in 2025. Now the pub has reopened under the name The Fire Sprite Pub and Grill, with the owners describing it as rooted in the Cotswolds, inspired by Texas. Rachel Minton Bailey spent time in Texas as a child and was inspired by the abundant fireflies in the state, saying her grandmother would call them fire sprites. Meanwhile, she says, her husband has always dreamt of owning a pub. The new owners promise slow-smoked meats, hearty pub classics, and flamed grilled favourites served in a welcoming setting where families, friends, walkers and locals can gather together. The pub, which was fully booked during its opening weekend, also has shepherd's huts for visitors to stay overnight. Mr. Bailey confirmed that they would give the pub a new name and said it would be based on English literature. Boasting Cotswold views, the pub is less than 2 miles from Jeremy Clarkson's hostelry, The Farmer's Dog, in Astle. Mr. Bailey said he expects the upgraded Horse and Radish to complement the former Top Gear Man's pub. The pub has already drawn attention for the complete renovation of the historic building. It dates back more than 100 years to 1871, when it was first mentioned in the census with the name New Inn. Over the years, the New Inn has had several transfers of ownership, with tenancies lasting on average 2 years. It continued to be called the New Inn into the 21st century, and then it reopened in May 2006 after a major refurbishment, which included an extra single story being built to the pub at the rear and the side. In 2013, the inn was renamed the Dovecot before being rebranded again as the Horse and Radish. The pub comes with planning permission for 8 shepherd's huts in the adjacent wild paddock, granted in 2022. And I can add to this article that I was actually there for lunch today and spoke to Rachel, who indeed said that she grew up in Texas, and we had a very enjoyable lunch.
I have the second pub story. It's entitled Pub Closed by Google, Saved with the Help of the Community. An Oxfordshire pub has been saved with good old community spirit after Google incorrectly marked the business as closed. The New Inn in Witney urged customers and residents to help in ensuring people knew the pub was open after it was marked as permanently closed on the search engine. The owner of the pub, who goes by the name of Sam, believes the business was marked incorrectly following a last owner's departure, and a few locals saying this place was done for good. He said in the impact the error had on the pub, I'd definitely say that it had some negative impact on us at first with it saying that we were closed. Due to it marking up people a bit unsure if they could actually come in or out. But with a good old bit of community spirit and management to get enough people to suggest on Google that we were actually officially open and ready for work and to rock and roll, which seems to have worked. In 2010, the New Inn hit the national headlines when David Cameron took a detour to the pub on his way to the general election count in Windrush Leisure Centre, where he was spotted sipping a Coke. The Tory leader enjoyed a drink with his wife Samantha and dozens of surprised locals before the count at 1 a.m. He was visited the Oak Panel pub in 2016 to plot his life after politics.
And now, a controversial article. McDonald's allowed to stay open 24 hours. McDonald's in Witney has been approved to remain open for 24 hours a day, despite considerable local opposition. The eatery, which is currently open 7 days a week from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m, applied to stay open for 24 hours back in February. The application submitted to West Oxfordshire District Council was approved by councillors with the provisions that this would only be for the drive-through and delivery applications. This means the inside seating restaurant of the business will open and close with its usual hours. Councillor David Edwards Hughes confirmed the news, acknowledging the significant local interest the application has received. The Witney Town Councillor stated that the licensing panel retained the power to review the licence should any issues arise once these hours take effect. He also encouraged residents to log any noise with West Oxfordshire District Council licensing. Some residents welcomed the application. However, some said it encouraged people to eat more fast food. Others also said that they would like to see improved litter picking in the area, as various side roads are full of wrappings. One woman said, "The hedgerows in the alley leading down to the Lees is full of discarded McDonald's debris."
This article is headed, "Parts of Region on Brink of Drought, Say Officials." Parts of southern, central and eastern England are moving closer to drought status, impacting water supplies in the southeast and the Cotswolds. The National Drought Group, NDG, reported that the recent extreme weather is having a severe impact on the environment, water supplies and food production. Drought has already been declared in two areas of Wales and parts of England following record dry conditions, heat waves, wildfires and dwindling rivers. The third heat wave of the year has caused ponds and wetlands to dry out, affecting bird breeding, while some rivers have dried up in places. The lack of July rainfall combined with the heat is putting pressure on public supplies, with demand for water increasing by up to 30% on the hottest days. This has led to seven water companies implementing or announcing future temporary use bans for 23 million customers to protect the environment and reduce the strain on their treatment works and storage during peak demand. Farmers have had to begin their harvests early, with warnings that cereal yields will be lower than expected. The NDG, which includes the Met Office, government regulators, water companies, farmers, Canal and River Trust, anglers and conservation experts, met following the recent heat wave, which saw 12 consecutive days of temperatures above 30 degrees C. The group has been taking various measures to combat the effects of the dry weather. The Environment Agency has carried out fish rescues, and water companies have increased their efforts to find and fix leaks, which occur more frequently in hot weather, as pipes move underground when soils dry out. They are also communicating with customers, offering advice and tips on using less water, whilst explaining any restrictions in place. The Environment Agency continues to work with the government, including DEFRA and the Cabinet Office, on future drought response. Helen Wakeham, Chair of the NDG and Director of Water at the Environment Agency, said, "Dry weather depletes our water, while the hot conditions mean we use more of it. This is a difficult combination, and we are seeing the effects on our farmers, our wildlife, and the amount available for public and business use. All sectors are taking action, and we are grateful to the public for following the restrictions where in place to make sure there is enough water for everyone this summer. We want everyone to stay safe and hydrated during the hot weather, but every drop we can save is a drop more for nature and agriculture. England has only received 3% of its long-term average July rainfall, with the south and east of the country receiving nothing at all. The longest spell without rain since the mid-1990s.
However, a splash park will remain open using an exemption despite the hosepipe ban. Witney Town Council will keep the splash park at the Lees open during the Thames Water hosepipe ban, but with reduced hours to save water. Operator Whitney Town Council said it recognised the value of the splash park to keep children and families cool during the summer. Last Thursday saw the start of Thames Water's hosepipe ban as water supplies start to drop. A Town Council spokesman said, following careful consideration, Whitney Town Council has decided to make use of a permitted exemption to the temporary Thames Water hosepipe ban, allowing the splash park at the Lees to remain open on a reduced schedule during the school holidays. The council recognises the importance of conserving water while also providing a safe and accessible place for local children and families to cool off, particularly as many households are unable to use paddling pools during the ban. The exemption exists to allow councils to strike this balance where there is a clear community benefit. The splash park will be open 10 a.m. to noon, closed between noon and 2 p.m. and then reopen until 5 p.m. These revised hours reduce overall water use while responding to feedback from families who prefer to avoid the period of direct overhead sun and enjoy the facilities in the morning and later in the afternoon. The splash park has been designed with water efficiency in mind. Sequenced jets maximise play value while using less water, and the water features only operate for 5 minutes after the foot-activated button is pressed, before automatically switching off until they are needed again. Whitney Town Council will continue to monitor the arrangement throughout the hosepipe ban and thanks residents for their understanding and support. By combining sensible water-saving measures with practical community benefits, the council aims to protect the environment while keeping this valued local facility available for families to enjoy. The ban applies to all customers that it supplies with drinking water across London, the Thames Valley and the Home Counties. It means hosepipes should not be used for watering gardens, cleaning cars or windows, or filling paddling pools, hot tubs or swimming pools. Neville Muncaster, Director of Strategic Water Resources at Thames Water, said, "While there is enough water for essential use, we need to reduce non-essential outdoor demand to keep taps flowing."
And now for this week's reflection, which comes from the Reverend Ralph Williamson, who, as well as being Rector of Stonesfield and Coombe Longa, where I live, drives or rides a very cool Royal Enfield motorbike. His piece will be read by Nigel.
What really matters? One of the joys of human life is our experience of things which move or please us, things which matter to us. We probably all have favourite places, favourite views, favourite music, favourite food, and so on. Special people are precious to us. The smell of the sea may bring sweet childhood memories back to us. Special mugs or tea towels may recall a particular holiday, and a treasured photograph may mean so much, especially as we get older and look back with thankfulness or longing. If we are fortunate enough to have religious faith, there may be churches or other sites which stir deep passions for us. Lovers of poetry or literature will know by heart the passages which inspire them. As a Christian, there are parts of the Bible which carry great meaning for me, which are able to express in just a few words a sense of what is truly important for me about my faith. The passage to which I return most often is from St. Paul's letter to the Galatians, chapter 3, verse 28, where he says, "There is no longer Jew or Greek, there is no longer slave or free, there is no longer male and female, for all of you are one in Jesus Christ." When Paul wrote this around 50 AD, it was a revolutionary statement. In his time, men and women were not equal, and there was a world of difference in the way slaves were treated compared to the freemen in the Roman Empire. Jews were separated from Greeks by a great number of rules and barriers, and all this was washed away in the early church and it is no wonder that thousands of people quickly joined the first Christians, who had such love for one another, despite apparent differences. Today, there are deep divisions between people in our communities and in our world, deep fears and barriers which separate us one from another in all kinds of ways. Vested interests stir up mistrust. There has been violence on our streets, and some people live in fear of the aggression and hatred of others. Although Paul's words were written specifically about the church community, for me, they are also a prophetic vision of what the world could be like if we put away our fear, overcome our divisions, and accept other people as they are. For me, this inclusiveness and openness of heart to other people is what really matters, both in the church and in the world at large. Overcoming the things which separate us from others may not be easy, but treasuring our shared and rich and varied humanity opens for us the beautiful possibility of new relationships, a better understanding of ourselves, and a joy we never knew before.
So thank you to both Nigel and Ralph for that. And now we move on to the editor's choice of pieces. If you've been paying attention when I'm editor, you'll know that I had a career in media. A couple of times on different sides of the world, my boss was somebody called Les Hinton. For decades, he was Rupert Murdoch's most trusted executive. Liverpool-born, Hinton's family moved to Australia, and despite a limited education, he was given a job as a copy boy at Murdoch's Adelaide News at the age of 15. Eventually, he rose to the top tier of Murdoch's business. He's published a frank and revealing memoir called The Bootle Boy, An Untidy Life in News. It's an engrossing read, especially if you've worked in the same orbit. Hinton relates several episodes worth sharing, but I settled on this account of the death of Diana, Princess of Wales, almost 30 years ago. It's 30 years ago in August. Hinton at the time was executive chairman of News Corporation in London and therefore responsible for Murdoch papers like The Sun, The News of the World, The Times and The Sunday Times. Chapter is titled Damsel in Distress, and it reads, "There's a lady on the phone wants to speak to you. Says she's Princess Diana." I'd been in London a few weeks when my assistant, Marion Krafinski, a tough and worldly native of Queens in New York City, called me from her desk. She was used to crackpot calls, but handled them with care, since once telling a croaky-voiced man to bugger off when he claimed to be Rupert Murdoch. "No, no, it's Murdoch here," said Rupert, who didn't sound himself, having just come round in hospital after a general anaesthetic. The anxious, whispery voice on the phone was unmistakably Diana. She said she hoped I was enjoying my new job, but quickly came to the point. Photographers were making her life unbearable, and she didn't know what to do. "They follow me everywhere, every day. I can never escape. They hide in the bushes and behind trees. I can never go anywhere without them following me. Can you help me, Mr. Hinton? I'm a damsel in distress." I offered sympathy, but no practical help. I told her these photographers were paparazzi, and they didn't work for newspapers and were beyond our control. I told her that Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis had been the target of obsessive media for 30 years, and that she was the new Jackie. Every publication and television network in the world wanted her image. "I understand that, but it doesn't help me," she said. Diana wanted to meet for lunch to talk more, but I declined her invitation. I knew that Diana was sophisticated in dealing with the media, that she lunched with editors, leaked to trusted reporters, gave aid to sympathetic authors, flirted with photographers one moment and raged at them the next. She had regularly outwitted royal family spin doctors, sworn enemies since her separation from Prince Charles 3 years before. But mass media had in some ways lost control of itself. Technology had spawned an uncountable army of wannabe photojournalists. Rich newspapers and magazines were ready to pay a lot of money for compelling images wherever they came from. these newspapers could profit from the work of the paparazzi without being responsible for their behaviour. Once, taking a photograph developing a print and wiring it to potential customers was complex and expensive. Now it was simple. Buy a camera and a laptop and you're ready to distribute photographs anywhere in the world in minutes. Anyone could join the paparazzi, and a relentless horde followed Diana because they could earn thousands for the right photo. Diana tried thwarting them. Arriving at the gym, she walked with her face to the wall and her back towards the photographers. She wore the same clothes day after day in an effort to date and devalue the images. She pleaded in tears to be left alone. Nothing made them give up the chase. I saw her last at the Sunday Times Christmas party in 1996, dressed in red, chatting, charming, relaxed, and this ironically because at a Fleet Street party she was truly safe from tormenting cameras. The following summer, on August the 31st, my bedside telephone woke me soon after 1 a.m. Phil Hall, the editor of the News of the World, said Diana had been in a car accident in Paris. Her companion, Dodi Fayed, was dead, and Diana was in hospital. I drove to our print plant in Wapping. It's a paradox how calm newsrooms can become when something momentous happens. Murder and disaster are daily events. But when no expression of alarm, anger, fear or grief can do justice to what has happened, a tense and almost speechless calm occurs. This is how it was that night in the News of the World and the Sunday Times. Phil Hall came towards me as I entered his newsroom. His walk was unhurried and his face looked as it usually did, clenched-jawed and unexpressive. "We're hearing she's dead," was all he said, and led me towards Stuart Kuttner, the veteran managing editor, who was leaning against a cabinet of newspaper files, looking at the ground with one hand against his face. He'd been on the phone to an aide of Prince Charles. "I asked how she was," Kuttner said. "He told me it was as bad as I could imagine. It's pretty clear she's dead, but he wouldn't say so." Photographs of the accident began arriving. One showed a flashlit image of Diana in the back of the wrecked Mercedes. The car door was open. She looked upright and calm without any evident injury. How could she be dead? Was our contact wrong? We knew we had to wait for an official confirmation before the presses could run. Word arrived that paparazzi on motorbikes were chasing Diana's car when it crashed, and police had arrested photographers at the scene. I remember that call from Diana. "I'm a damsel in distress." I walked to my office to sit alone in the dark. Stuart Higgins, the editor of The Sun, called me. He was crying. The News of the World editors had prepared a front page, the headline, "Diana Dies in Paris Crash." I looked at it for a moment, then took a piece of paper and wrote, "Diana Dead." I handed it to Hall. "Everyone is asleep," I said. "A lot of people will find this out when they see the Sunday front pages, which is something that almost never happens anymore. Let's tell them the simple fact. Why not make that your entire front page?" He agreed. When her death was announced, the presses didn't stop until Sunday lunchtime, hours later than usual. I'd woken our production and circulation executives, alerting them to stock extra newsprint and prepare for days of big print runs. The prospect of big sales is often a cause for celebration, but not that night. Rupert Murdoch was in London, and I called him with the news at 5:15 a.m. There was no point waking him sooner, but I didn't want him finding out from anyone else. I'd recommend the book if you're interested in the media. As I said, it's called The Bootle Boy, and it's by Les Hinton. Next is quiz time, and it's over to Ethan.
Okay, so here are the answers from last week's quiz, which was read by Byron Russell, and it was all about Oxfordshire. So number one, Which town is generally regarded as being the gateway to the Cotswolds?
Burford.
Burford is correct. Yeah, that is right. Number two. Which of the following is not an Oxfordshire river? Evenload, Cherwell, Glyme or Neen? Neen is also correct. It flows from North Hampshire to the Wash. Number three. Bampton is claimed home of which traditional entertainment? There's some controversy with this one. Does anyone know?
Is it that Sally Ann?
Aunt Sally, you mean?
I don't come from Oxfordshire. I come from Kent.
We can tell.
Morris dancing.
Yeah, here it says Morris dancing, but some people might have said the shirt race, but that was only a thing in 1953, whilst Morris dancing was a lot earlier than that. So, moving on, number four. Which Oxford pub was the meeting place of J.R.R. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis? It is the Eagle and Child, yes. And then lastly, number five, which of the following counties do not share a border with Oxfordshire, Gloucestershire, Hampshire, Warwickshire and Berkshire? Okay, it was Hampshire, the answer.
And thanks very much, Ethan. Now for this week's quiz questions, which are inspired by the recent hot temperatures. Question one. Who was the ancient Greek god of the sun? Question two. Which planet is closest to the sun? Question three. Which group had a hit with the song Sunny Afternoon? Question four. Which Ernest Hemingway novel has the word sun in the title? And question five, which British car manufacturer has had a model called an Alpine? Answers next week. Now for our notice board. I don't have any forthcoming events that I think would be of much interest to you, but there are plenty of village fetes and fairs around if you feel like an afternoon out. I can particularly recommend the increasingly popular cream teas in my own village of Coombe, which are on every Sunday until the 30th of August from 2:30 p.m. until 5 p.m. Delicious cakes, I'm promised. They are held in the garden of the village's reading room and there's plenty of shade. Now, we have one listener with a birthday this week, and that is Mrs. Rosemary Gibbons of Whitney, who turned 86 today. Many happy returns of the day, Mrs. Gibbons. We should say that's today, Thursday, when we're recording. Now, four deaths were reported in the Gazette this week. They were Doreen Margaret Farmer of Filkins, who died on the 17th of July, aged 88. Peter Lewis, who died on the 26th of June. Florence McCurrock of Whitney, who died on the 10th of July, aged 85, and Thomas Laurie McMath, who died on the 1st of July, aged 88. Our condolences to family and friends. And now we start part two of our news items with an item from Stefan.
Yeah, its road resurfacing scheme hits the halfway mark. A major road improvement programme is now at its halfway point. More than 105,000 square metres of Oxfordshire Road will be resurfaced as part of the work, which aims to renew worn and deteriorated road surfaces and reduce future repair needs. The programme, led by Oxfordshire County Council and highways contractor M Group, covers 35 roads across the county and is due to be completed by mid-October. Liz Leffman, Oxfordshire County Council Cabinet Member for Highways, Construction and Repairs, said, "Following the extreme wet and cold weather we experienced last year, we will be using the summer months to get the roads ready to withstand the worst of the winters to come. This vital new programme will extend the life of roads, preventing water getting in, reducing the need for frequent repairs, enhancing skid resistance for several travel and for safer travel, and smoothing out road surfaces. Prevention is better than cure. I know from my own division that the roads that were least affected by potholes this winter were the ones that have been resurfaced most recently. Key routes set to be resurfacing and they include the A44 Worcester Road in Chipping Norton, the A40 at Swinbrook, and the A361 Southam Road in Banbury. Richard Lovewell, business director of M Group, said resurfacing is a vital pillar of highway maintenance alongside preventative measures such as surface dressing and reactive repairs. By investing in the resurfacing at the right time, we can extend the life of the carriageway, improve safety for road users and help prevent more costly repairs in the future. Work is being scheduled overnight where possible to reduce disruption, with road resurfacing and places during surfacing and temporary traffic lights used for temporary repairs. Resurfacing follows the Council's £8 million surface dressing programme, most of which was completed during April and June.
And now three brief notices all concerning Thames Valley Police. The first one, police act on antisocial behaviour. Warnings have been issued after youths' antisocial behaviour in an Oxfordshire town. According to Thames Valley Police, in recent months, Bampton has faced issues with unruly behaviour. Following investigations involving CCTV and reports from residents, those involved have been issued with acceptable behaviour contracts for 12 months. The contracts, which are signed by both the children involved and their parents, outline a set of rules to follow in public places and serve as a warning about the potential consequences of future misbehaviour. And now, motorbikes are seized. Four off-road motorbikes have been seized following antisocial riding. Officers from the Woodstock neighbourhood team confiscated the bikes in Wootton after they were seen being used illegally across fields and public byways without landowner permission. The force warned that such dangerous behaviour poses a significant risk to horse riders, cyclists and walkers, particularly on narrow rural routes. The Woodstock neighbourhood team said, "The antisocial use of off-road bikes has a significant impact on those who legitimately enjoy and use our rural byways and bridleways." Finally, warning after attempted burglary. A warning has been issued after an attempted burglary in a village. Thames Valley Police has released security advice after an incident took place in Shipton Road, Milton under Wychwood, near Burford, in which would-be intruders tried to break into a property from the rear, possibly to steal car keys. PCSO Wesley Smith advised double-locking doors and windows, installing alarm systems, and keeping car keys and valuables out of sight and away from entry points.
My article reads, "Developer defends solar farm bid after MP fears." Developers of what could be one of Europe's largest solar farms have defended the scheme after an MP said the plan were full of holes. Callum Miller, Liberal Democrat MP for Bicester and Woodstock, wrote to Minister and former Energy Secretary Ed Miliband, calling on government to reject the application for the vast £800 million Botley West scheme in West Oxfordshire. Now developers, Photovolt Development Partners, have issued a robust defence, insisting the project will deliver major climate and energy benefits while protecting local communities and heritage. While Mr. Miller strongly supports the rapid expansion of renewable energy, he insisted this does not mean accepting every proposal. He says the developers' PVDP have failed to address serious concerns over the impact of the project, which covers about 1,000 hectares of around three main areas of North Woodstock and west of both Kidlington and Botley. He said it threatened nearby communities, the surrounding landscape and the Blenheim Palace UNESCO World Heritage Site. Project manager Mark Owen Lloyd said the group had worked historically close with Historic England since the proposal started in 2022. He said, which he said has no risk to the World Heritage Age status. PDVP insisted its 840-watt scheme has been developed following extensive consultation with local communities alongside detailed environmental and technical assessments. It said throughout the application process, PhotoVolt has assessed every home within 250 metres of development. As a result, we have removed panels from a number of locations, increased buffer zones to add residential properties, and added further non-panel fields to reduce impacts on nearby homes. Additional hedge grows and tree planting will also screen views and minimalise visual impacts. The developer remains confident that a viable nationwide grid connection can be delivered in line with the project's anticipated timetable. Working closely with the hydrologists, it says flooding is not an issue and can in fact be alleviated around the site by an artificial lake at Cassington.
Anger at new plans for AI data centre in rural area. Locals have expressed their outrage over plans for a new AI data centre spanning five warehouses proposed for the countryside near Burford. A planning application for a new AI data centre on land and in barns, which was previously used by agricultural business, has been lodged with West Oxfordshire District Council. The proposed data centre would be operated by Brakenwood Family Pension Trust and is being put forward by AIVS, an AI infrastructure firm focused on building centres in the UK. But it has received a huge number of objections from locals, with more than 180 people leaving comments on the planning application expressing their concerns. Lily Crozier of Carterton said, "Building a data centre in Chilton not only damages the local wildlife and ecology, but adds to the destruction of human and animal habitats worldwide. The environmental damage data centres such as this pose far outweigh any minute positives, and this is not the stance West Oxfordshire should be taking. Shameful. Authorities like Chilton Parish Council and Thames Valley Police also voiced their opposition, and council departments said stringent conditions should be attached to any permission granted by the council. The police issued a holding objection to the plans on the grounds that there is insufficient information on the security measures protecting the data centre, as it would store and process data linked to government communication networks and would likely be designated critical national infrastructure. The applicant responded to many of the commentators, emphasising that because the technology is changing rapidly, only an outline application has been submitted, leaving most of the application's technical matters for a more detailed design stage of the planning. The facility itself is not expected to become operational until after 2032 and would take at least 12 months to build, with the applicant adding, "It would be inappropriate to commit the scheme to today's server, cooling and energy technology when these systems are developing rapidly." They did say, however, that designs do not currently envision large volumes of water being required for cooling or abstraction, and instead air-cooled, closed-loop or factory-contained systems are being explored. Scottish and Southern Electricity Networks, SSEN, has advised that an additional 30 MW of dedicated electricity supply routed separately to the normal grid that supplies homes and businesses, would be required at an additional infrastructure cost of approximately £30 million.
Clarkson's Choir announces debut album. A choir formed by Jeremy Clarkson has announced the release of their debut album. The Hawkstone Farmers Choir shared the news while performing Calon Lan in Welsh for the first time at the Royal Welsh Show. The choir was set up by the TV presenters to support farmers' mental health, confirmed that their debut single, This Is Home, will be released soon. The members originally came together from an advertising campaign for Clarkson's Cotswold brewing firm, Hawkstone, but have since worked together focusing on mental health in the farming community. The group, including members from Wales, also won Britain's Got Talent earlier this year, winning £250,000 and a spot at the Royal Variety Performance in November. During their performance, which included four songs at the event on July 20th, the group stood in three rows and sang the Welsh hymn originally written by Daniel James in the 1890s. And this story is accompanied by a photo of the choir, which spans around 30 people, outside the Hawkstones pub getting ready to start singing and rehearsing.
Well, that's almost it for this week's edition. I don't know how many of you use buses, but there's a new ticketing service called Freeflow, which I've been asked to let you know about. I should have mentioned it during the notice board, but here it is anyway. It's being introduced by Go Thames Valley, which is the new umbrella company for the bus companies Oxford Bus Company, Thames and Pullums. Now, Freeflow, they say, is a tap-on, tap-off system which can make travelling by bus quicker and easier. Their marketing head, Lauren Eames, said, just tap on, and when you tap off with your credit card or your phone, your fare will be automatically calculated and charged. So remember, there's a credit card involved or a bank card and or a phone. Lauren continued, it also supports daily and weekly fare capping, ensuring that you never pay more than the best available price. With Freeflow, you don't need to pre-select tickets or worry about choosing the right fare. The system does it all for you. She was also keen to point out that Freeflow doesn't replace traditional tickets, so you don't have to use it. But it makes for a great alternative option for bus users who enjoy the convenience of a tap-on, tap-off system. Now, our thanks go to the Whitney Gazette and the Chipping Norton News for the articles we've used this week. And our readers, as you have heard throughout the broadcast, have been Stefan Gabshevich, Nigel James, Valerie T and Anne Norris, and of course, we shouldn't forget Ethan. That's our student, who's done a very fine job, I think. So, very finally, I should say that, of course, I have to say that our recording has been made possible by the chap beside me, Graham Diacon. Our admin team were Rachel Fielder and Jenny Wiley. And it's Nigel and or Stefan, they're fighting about it, and me, who will be copying and packing the memory sticks to send out to you. So that is all for this week, but before we go, as is now traditional, let's finish with a joke. So here it goes. The world ruler twanging finals this year will be held in Dodoin. It makes a change from the usual city of Pyongyang. Keep listening at the end of our programme for highlights of this week's best radio and TV watching, and I know everybody here at Whitney Talking News would like to wish you well, and so until our next edition, we will all say goodbye. Do you like that? Pyongyang.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
And now for a look at this week's radio recommendations compiled by Angela and read by Gilly. And we start with Saturday the 1st of August. The store Wilkinson's, or Wilko as it became known, was a successful privately owned family business, offering low-priced household products from its chain of high street stores. So why did it falter during a cost of living crisis? In this week's edition of Toast, Sean Farringdon investigates. Toast is at 12:04 p.m. on Radio 4 and repeated tomorrow, Sunday the 2nd of August, at 9 p.m. This afternoon, you can hear Dame Penelope Keith, who recently died at the age of 86, in Noel Coward's play, Waiting in the Wings. Tensions rise at a home for retired actors when the famous Lotta Bainbridge arrives. Years earlier, Lotta married the former husband of another resident who has resolved never to forgive her, and their feud soon infects everyone around them. Waiting in the Wings is at 3 p.m. on Radio 4. Then tonight, BBC Proms presents an evening devoted to Mahler's First Symphony, in which Nicholas Colon conducts the Aurora Orchestra in a performance of the work from memory. The concert starts at 7 p.m. on Radio 3. On to Sunday the 2nd of August. There's a dramatisation of Andrea Levy's award-winning 2004 novel exploring the racial prejudice encountered in post-war Britain. It runs each day in 10-minute slots for the next couple of weeks, but starting today with an extended broadcast of over an hour. There's a choice of times to tune in on Radio 4 Extra, 8:50 a.m., 1:50 p.m. or 7:50 p.m. Lauren Laverne's guest this week on Desert Island Discs is entrepreneur Emma Greed. Last year, Forbes magazine rated her as one of America's richest self-made women. Not bad for a humble start from London's East End. Tune in at 10 a.m. on Radio 4, repeated on Friday the 7th of August at 9 a.m. There's the second and final part of Alice Childress's play Trouble in Mind. With opening night approaching, Willetta's growing unease with the play and her character comes to a head at 3 p.m. on Radio 4. Finally for Sunday, Michael Mosley explores how switching to whole grain versions of foods can help lower blood pressure, improve heart health, and boost the gut microbiome. That's Just One Thing with Michael Mosley at 7:45 p.m. on Radio 4. And now a look at those programmes which are broadcast each day at the same time. In Tony Hawkes' Giving Nothing Away, the comedian explores issues surrounding inheritance tax and its impact on both society as a whole and on the people who acquire wealth they did nothing to earn, at 11:45 a.m. each day on Radio 4. The Bare Necessities is a new series in which Dan Richards seeks out the tradition bearers and carriers of ancient knowledge who choose to live in close connection with the natural world. He begins by meeting Zaki Bassam, an instructor of traditional skills and survival, based in the Cairngorms National Park. The Bare Necessities is at 1:45 p.m. each day on Radio 4. This week's Composer of the Week is Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, 1756 to 1791. Kate Mollison tells Mozart's story through five relationships that shaped him and his music, beginning with the one he had with his father, Leopold, at 4 p.m. each day on Radio 3. Book at bedtime this week is Oliver Goldsmith's The Vicar of Wakefield. The Reverend Dr. Primrose enjoys a contented life in his idyllic country parsonage, but in a series of misfortunes and calamities, his world unravels.
It's at 10:45 p.m. each night on Radio 4. And don't forget Small Island, which started yesterday at 8:45 a.m., 1:45 p.m. and 7:45 p.m. each day on Radio 4 Extra. Now here are some individual programmes to listen to throughout the week, starting with Monday the 3rd of August. Behind the Crime is a new series in which two forensic psychologists who work in prisons interview people about their time behind bars and the lives they led before their sentences. First up is Peter, who grew up in Gloucestershire. He reflects on the choices he made that led to his spending several years in a violent Ecuadorian prison. Behind the Crime is at 11 a.m. on Radio 4 and repeated on Sunday the 9th of August at 5:10 p.m. After an unexpected offer of early retirement, Ellie starts pondering a move to the country. Will is looking to increase his income, which forces Mitch to think about moving out. Meanwhile, Morris is feeling happy. That's in this week's sitcom Alone at 2:15 p.m. on Radio 4. More comedy at 6:30 p.m. tonight, with a choice of Just a Minute on Radio 4 or The Incomparable Dad's Army on Radio 4 Extra. Dad's Army can also be heard at 7:30 a.m. or 12:30 p.m. earlier today. Next, Tuesday the 2nd of August. Today's Radio 4 drama is Sunbird, a romantic comedy starring Lucy Speed. Lizzie unexpectedly finds herself in a love triangle while on holiday in Ibiza at 2:15 p.m. on Radio 4, followed by Lady on Trial with Lucy Worsley. And this week, Lucy and her guests discuss the case of Victorian singer and campaigner Georgina Weldon, who launched a number of legal actions after her husband tried to have her committed to a psychiatric hospital, at 3 p.m. on Radio 4. In WhatsApp Docs, Chris and Sam Van Tulliken this week explore how much water the human body really needs. Tune in at 4:30 p.m. on Radio 4, and it's repeated on Saturday the 8th of August at 9:30 a.m. Then this evening, there's a documentary which explores a covert Cold War trade in which Jewish lives were exchanged for livestock and cash. The programme follows two children raised in communist Romania without their parents, who had defected to the West, and how they were eventually reunited with their families. That's A Romanian Ransom at 8 p.m. on Radio 4 and repeated tomorrow, Wednesday the 3rd of August, at 11 a.m. It's followed by In Touch with Peter White at 8:40 p.m. on Radio 4 and repeated on Sunday the 9th of August at 5:45 a.m. Now, Wednesday the 5th of August. When Canadian academic Kate Bowler was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer, the support she received from those around her was overwhelmingly positive. Matthew Saeed asks why people often reach for positivity in the face of suffering and where that instinct comes from. That's Sideways at 9 a.m. on Radio 4 and repeated tomorrow, Thursday the 6th of August at 5:04 a.m. It's an oft-repeated fact that the human body is 70% water. But what exactly does that mean, and where is it all? Emily Knight investigates in The Ocean Within Us at 3:30 p.m. on Radio 4 and repeated on Friday the 7th of August at 11:30 p.m. In the BBC Proms tonight, conductor Kachun Wong leads the Halle Orchestra at the Royal Albert Hall in a programme built around Rachmaninoff's Second Symphony, including Ravel's The Valley of the Bells and Nadia Boulanger's single movement, fantasy for piano and orchestra. The concert starts at 6 p.m. on Radio 3. Then it's off to Middlesbrough Town Hall for a pre-recorded prom, featuring Northumbrian folk group The Unthanks as they join the Royal Northern Symphonia for an evening of Northern storytelling with strings. That starts at 8:10 p.m. on Radio 3. It's followed by a concert to mark the 40th anniversary of Paul Simon's Grammy-winning album Graceland. With the new Civilization Orchestra and Paul Simon's original collaborators, Ladysmith Black Mambazo, at 7:15 p.m. on Radio 3. Moving on to Thursday the 6th of August. The Guitar Story is a new series in which John Wilson explores the story of the guitar as a driver of social and cultural change. He begins with the development of the classical guitar in Spain, alongside the adoption of blues guitar and early experiments with electrification, at 9:30 a.m. on Radio 4. Then, in Sliced Bread this week, Greg Foote and guests examine the science of pillows, finding out whether a pillow's shape and stuffing can affect sleep quality, at 12:32 on Radio 4, and repeated on Saturday the 8th of August at 5:30 p.m. Today's Radio 4 drama is A Portmerian Love Affair with Life. A gentle drama set in the summer of 1966, which imagines the Beatles manager, Brian Epstein, finding an unexpected connection with a thoughtful young gardener at the Italianate village of Portmerian, at 2:15 p.m. on Radio 4. Finally, to Friday the 7th of August. The drama Limelight Central Intelligence continues. In 1966, Soviet nuclear power is growing, and Lyndon B. Johnson wants answers. Inside the CIA, Eloise Page and Richard Helms are trying to bring the agency into a new age of intelligence, at 2:15 p.m. on Radio 4. Then later on tonight, why not wind down with Classic FM and Calm Classics, a selection of relaxing music designed to ease away the stresses and strains of the day. It starts at 10 p.m. on Classic FM. Happy listening.
Now for the audio-described television programmes for Saturday, 1st of August to Friday, 7th of August 2026, compiled by Lisa and read by Diane. On BBC One, on Saturday the 1st, you can catch up with Homes Under the Hammer at 12 noon, followed by Bargain Hunt from Shrewsbury at 1:15. BBC Two are showing the classic Marlon Brando movie On the Waterfront at 10:05, followed by A Cook Abroad, Rachel Coo's Malaysia at 12:50. There's more cookery over on ITV One at 12 noon in Prewleith's Cotswold Kitchen. There's more movie action on BBC One at 3:55 when Ben Stiller stars in fantasy comedy Night at the Museum 2. Alan Partridge pops up in the Peak District at 9:10 in How Are You? It's Alan, starring Steve Coogan. Over on BBC Two at 4:40, it's part 3 of Evolution, in which Chris Packham examines the evolution of the bat, followed by a classic sci-fi movie at 5:40 when Christopher Reeve stars as Superman. ITV One has Deal or No Deal Celebrity Special at 7 p.m, followed by spy adventure movie Casino Royale at 8 p.m, Daniel Craig's first appearance as James Bond 007. It's all a little more serious on Channel 4 with Hitler's Games, Berlin 1936 at 8 p.m. This documentary film tells the story of several remarkable athletes, including record-breaking sprinter Jesse Owens, but also how Hitler used the games as propaganda. This is followed by Dictator, the Hitler Interviews at 9 p.m, the first of a three-part series. Now for Sunday. Daytime options are a little limited, although ITV1 have Fern Britton Inside the Vets at 11:30, followed by Tom Kerridge Cooks Italy at 12:30. There's also a classic James Bond adventure, The Man with the Golden Gun, at 2:10 p.m, starring Roger Moore as 007. Cricket fans might be interested in The 100 at 2:15 on BBC Two, which has full commentary of MI London versus Manchester Supergiants from the Oval. The ladies' match is first followed by the men's match, which starts at 6. BBC One's evening schedule includes Celebrity Escape to the Country at 6 p.m, and episode 3 of apocalyptic drama The Rapture airs at 9 p.m. If romantic comedy is more to your taste, catch the award-winning movie Shakespeare in Love at 10 p.m. over on BBC Two. Gwyneth Paltrow and Joseph Fiennes star. There's part 2 of thought-provoking documentary Force of Nature on ITV One at 7 p.m, narrated by Andrew Lincoln, followed at 8 by the return of popular crime drama Vandervolk, starring Mark Warren as the Dutch detective. Over on Channel 4, there's comedy film Sister Act at 4:35, starring Whoopi Goldberg and Dame Maggie Smith. And then at 8 p.m, there's a new series, Richard E. Grant's Very Modern Odyssey. The actor retraces the 20-year journey of Odysseus in Homer's Greek classic. At 9 p.m, Claudia Winkleman is joined by Jules Holland at London Bridge Station for episode 4 of The Piano. And there's the Oscar-winning drama Erin Brockovich at 10:05 p.m, starring Julia Roberts in the title role. Turning now to this week's soap schedule. Monday, we have EastEnders at 7:30 on BBC One and Emmerdale and Corrie on ITV One at 8 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. respectively. Tuesday has EastEnders at 7:30 p.m. and Emmerdale and Corrie at 8 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. Wednesday, it's EastEnders at 7:30 p.m. and Emmerdale and Corrie at 8 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. Thursday is EastEnders at 7:30 with Emmerdale at 8 p.m. and Corrie at 8:30 p.m. Moving on to Monday, 3rd of August. BBC One has Homes Under the Hammer at 11:15 a.m. and BBC Two offers The Hairy Biker's Vacation at 2:45 when Si and Dave visit Tuscany. It's Dickinson's Real Deal at 2 p.m. on ITV One. And Find It, Fix It, Flog It is on Channel 4 at 12:10, this week from Oxford. BBC One's evening schedule is not exactly packed, but you can catch episode 4 of The Rapture at 9 p.m. Over on BBC Two, Chris Packham studies dolphins in part 4 of Evolution at 9 p.m, followed by The Gentle Charm of Mortimer and Whitehouse Gone Fishing at 10, when Bob and Paul take a boat trip on the Norfolk Broads. ITV One have Fletcher's Family Farm at 7:30 p.m, and at 9 p.m. there's a brand new series of Long Lost Family, Born Without Trace, presented by Davina McCall and Nikki Campbell. Over on Channel 4 at 4 p.m, it's part 1 of Saving Country Houses with the late, great Penelope Keith, followed by Chateau DIY at 5 p.m. At 8 p.m, there's another episode of Dover 24/7, Britain's Busiest Port. A new series of Celebrity Hunted kicks off at 9 p.m. in aid of Stand Up to Cancer. And at 10, it's Secret Lives of Gypsy Wives. And so now to Tuesday. BBC One has Bargain Hunt at 12:15, whilst over on ITV One at 2 p.m, Dickinson's Real Deal visits Crewe. The only other daytime offering of interest is another match in the 100 series. This time Sunrisers Leeds take on London Spirit at the hallowed ground of Headingley. The ladies play at 3 p.m. and the men at 6 p.m. Live coverage with full commentary, a real treat for cricket fans. BBC One has part 4 of The Great British Sewing Bee at 8 p.m. This week's theme is a celebration of Mexican textiles. Followed by, and in total contrast, part 5 of Murder 24/7, an investigation into the murder of a Hereford man, which took place in 2025. BBC Two's evening highlight is Interview with the Vampire at 9:30, another episode of the Gothic horror series based on Anne Rice's best-selling The Vampire Chronicles. It's not everyone's cup of tea, but vampires do seem to be all the rage these days. ITV One has Inside the Langham, Britain's first grand hotel, at 7:30pm. The hotel's CEO arrives to inspect an ambitious renovation. Channel 4 has more Saving Houses with Penelope Keith at 4pm, followed by Chateau DIY at 5. An interesting sounding documentary continues at 8pm, Hotel Chocolat Unwrapped, in which we go behind the scenes at one of Britain's biggest independent chocolate makers. Then it's episode 2 of Celebrity Hunted at 9, and we round off the evening with the Armchair Critics on Gogglebox at 10pm. Now it's Wednesday, and BBC One has Homes Under the Hammer at 11:15, followed by Bargain Hunt at 12:15. Over on ITV One at 2pm, Dickinson's Real Deal visits Oldham, whilst Find It, Fix It, Flog It visits Suffolk at 12:10, on Channel 4. Cricket is again the main event, with live commentary from Trent Bridge of Trent Rockets versus Birmingham Phoenix from 2:45. As usual, it's ladies first, followed by the men's game. Very slim pickings this evening on ITV One, apart from the soaps, which we've already mentioned. Channel 4 has Saving Country Houses at 4pm and Chateau DIY at 5pm. The property theme continues at 8pm with Extraordinary Extensions. Tiny Temper meets a couple who have spent £3.5 million to turn their Surrey home into a Marbella-inspired luxury party resort. The phrase "more money than sense" does spring to mind. Then at 9pm, Simon Pegg stars in episode 5 of The Undeclared War, when Barbara comes under Charlie's scrutiny as tragedy strikes GCHQ. Now for Thursday, the Hairy Bikers continue their vacation on BBC Two at 2:45, this time visiting Lyon, the culinary capital of France, whilst Dickinson's Real Deal visits slightly less glamorous Sheffield over on ITV One at 2pm. Catch the final part of Fake or Fortune on BBC One at 8pm, in which Fiona Bruce visits Somerset to authenticate 15 unsigned prints of painter Lucian Freud's etching Girl with a Fig Leaf. Is it Freud or fraud? Followed by Who Do You Think You Are at 9pm. This week, world champion athlete Katarina Johnson-Thompson sets out to trace her Bahamian history. A fairly packed schedule on BBC Two, starting with Escape to the Country at 7pm, followed by Digging for Britain at 8pm, when Alice Roberts explores the archaeological finds at Tintern Abbey in Monmouthshire. At 9, it's the final part of The Devil in the Family, The Fall of Ruby Frankie. And then at 10, another episode of the intriguingly quirky Inside Number 9, starring Reese Shearsmith. Tom Kerridge visits a tomato farm in Italy at 7:30 over on ITV One, the fourth helping of Tom Kerridge Cooks Italy. Then at 9, it's another stage in The Chase Around the World as the teams land in Paris. Another property-themed selection on Channel 4, starting with Saving Country Houses at 4pm and Chateau DIY at 5pm. Then at 8pm, Renovation Rescue visits West Sussex, where artist Penny dreams of a relaxing seaside retirement near her family. And now for Friday the 7th of August. The Hairy Bikers are in northern Spain at 2:45 on BBC Two on the final leg of their journey, whilst David Dickinson visits Newport at 2 on ITV1. He's definitely drawn the short straw again. Meanwhile, the Find It, Fix It, Flog It team visit Norfolk at 12:10 on Channel 4. An interesting documentary on BBC One at 7:30pm, The Nanas, Age Against the Machine, a Welsh punk band made up of six women aged over 50, follow their dream of playing at an all-female punk festival in New York. Followed by the final episode of Granite Harbour at 8, when Lindo and Bart race against time to find the real killer. At 9pm, there's another episode of comedy Android, starring Diane Morgan and Sue Johnston. On BBC Two at 6:30pm, Roman Kemp discovers how beetroot can boost our minds and bodies in just one thing. And at 9pm, it's Bergerac, the Jersey sleuth, and his team uncover fresh evidence in the hunt for a notorious criminal. Football is back on ITV One. There's full commentary of the first round League Cup clash between Middlesbrough and Wrexham from 7:30pm. More Saving Country Houses on Channel 4 at 4pm and Chateau DIY at 5pm. Then at 8pm, it's part 4 of Surgery Secrets of the Super Rich. And that concludes this week's audio-described television listings. Not a vintage crop, as is sometimes the case at this time of year, but hopefully everyone will find something of interest.
DNF Soundings.